We are so grateful that you are here with us. My name is Devin.
And my name is Tamara.
Our heart's passion is to discuss our experiences, our triumphs through growth, and the hard times in between. We delve into this earth walk that has led us to where we are now. We dig into topics about growth, love, spiritual enlightenment, and so much more. Our heart's desire is to bring people together and connect. We will be interviewing people regularly as to move ourselves and hopefully you to expand and grow.
We are light workers, we are healers, we are lovers of knowledge and growth. We are sacred feminine and masculine. We are truth seekers. We are inspired by our intuition. We are divine souls. We are the collective. Our mission is to show up in light and unconditional love, to be an example and offer our words to lead you and to inspire you by sharing the deep truths of our hearts, where we've been and where we're going.
We are you and you are us.
Align and rise with us. Good morning, all of our beautiful listeners. We are so excited this morning. We have an incredible woman who we literally have just met for the first time. We've been following her on TikTok and just totally vibing and connecting and relating to her content. And so we reached out to her, set up sort of a little quick vibe check on Zoom, and we're just jumping right into our podcast this morning. So I am just going to let her jump in, introduce herself, and we're just going to follow your lead. So we're so grateful that you're here. Loving the energy that we already have sort of like flowing this morning. And I'm really excited to see where our intuition just takes us this morning during our meeting together.
Great. I'm very happy to be here. My name is Onami. Everyone calls me Mommy. And what am I? It's like I'm 50% a mom, a regular old mom in the kid trenches, and then 50% an ancient spiritual teacher that obsessively looks into the meaning behind like literally everything that happens always. And I've been on this path, you know, I officially started this path when my fiance died in 2015. Mm-hmm. It was the first time that I had had like a spiritual experience that I couldn't deny. I had grown up in a doomsday sex cult called the Children of God, and I escaped when I was 13, and I was like, God, no. But the night before my fiance died, I had a dream that he died, where I literally like saw the future and he was dead in the same way that I saw it 24 hours after that. So I left my job. I packed up everything that I had into a backpack. I went to Southeast Asia looking for answers. And on that road, I became a teacher. And a teacher is a student. So the number one most important thing to me in my whole life is getting a deeper understanding of spiritual tools. But as a teacher, my mission is to make these spiritual tools easy to understand. I feel like there's a lot of the paths that I've been lucky enough to make my way to have always had this, you know, gatekeeping or hierarchy, you know, 10 years on this and then you become this, that I just feel is very much outdated, that might have been useful when these teachings were first being introduced, you know, when there were like legitimate witch hunts and things like that. But now at this stage, I feel like what the world really needs is spiritual teachings that are very easy to understand and very practical to apply. And so that's what my mission is here to do, is to make things as easy to understand as if I was like communicating them to one of my children. So that's what I do. My official title is teacher. Someone asked me my official credentials the other day, you know, fumbling for my license and registration. but that's at the deepest level, that's what I do. I could definitely put some more flair on it, but I'm a teacher and a mom and a student. And
I actually had like so many feelings while you were sharing your story, which is why I love this, just like connecting and understanding. Because here's what we do in this world that we live in: we look at somebody and we immediately go to this space of judgment, and we think we know who they are. based on what they look like. And we are learning to just like look beyond that. That has been so much of our growth path and mine for sure. Deb can speak into that herself, but just like understanding that everybody has a story and that these bodies that house our souls while we're here on this earth walk are just that. And there's so much more underneath of that. And it's really powerful to hear a space that you would have come from and all of this greatness that you're walking in right now as a result of experiencing that trauma. And maybe you can just like share a little, if you're feeling that, just like how you worked through that, how you walked through those traumas and just like kept stepping into the space that you're in right now.
Yeah, the image that's coming to mind is I've seen some the marathon like Tough Mudder comes to mind, where I think like at the end there's like a period where you're like crawling through the mud, like on your, that's, I definitely was not like walking through my traumas. It was definitely just like mud. It was very grimy. So I was born into a cult called the Children of God, and I left via a suicide attempt at age 13. It was my second suicide attempt. My first one was when I was 7. It was a hard life. And I, you know, people that are born on this path, you know, being a teacher, it's, you agree to going through these experiences, but it was not going to make sense to me for like a very long time. I got out of the cult when I was 13. And I didn't know, you know, the second I was out in the world, I didn't know that the rest of the world didn't think that the world was going to be ending very soon. And I had no idea. I had never listened to music that was not from the cult. I had never, wasn't allowed to watch movies. I didn't know anybody that wasn't in the cult. And so it was like a very harsh reality for me, that I just didn't know like how to be with. And so how I, you know, dealt with that trauma from age 13 to age 25 was really, 2010 was when I started. I was like, I need to change something in my life, but drugs, alcohol, bulimia. I was like very bulimic from age 12 on, and work. And these four things, drugs, alcohol, bulimia, and work, I just filled every moment of every day from sunup to sundown with these practices so that I would be like too busy to think about anything else. And I started getting, you know, some concerned boyfriends in my 20s and stuff that were like, oh, you know, you should go to therapy. And I went to therapy a few times, but I didn't like, I probably could have had some results with the therapist that like knew the specific cult that I had grown up in, but that wasn't the case. And what I found with therapy was that I would go there and I would open up, and I didn't have an opportunity to like close things back down. So basically I'd bust my ass to go uptown to, you know, the 55th Street to go to therapy. And I'd go there and I'd get angry. And then it'd be like, okay, time's up. And I'd be like crying on the subway to go back to work, feeling worse. And then there was like no end in sight. Like everyone that I knew was like, you got to go to therapy. I've been with my therapist for 10 years. I'm like, I definitely can't do 10 years of something like this. And then, so I kind of, I ruled therapy out pretty early on, because I was like, there's a lot of work to get some pills, you know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to get my hand on the pills here. But I ruled out therapy pretty early on, and I thought that my life was improving because I had been in love with my best friend for like years. We were punks in love. We lived together. We had known each other for 10 years. We had dated off and on, but never really took. And then finally we got together, but he was got addicted to heroin at that time. Mm-hmm. And luckily, you know, I was an alcoholic, and you can't mix opiates and alcohol without barfing your brains out. So luckily my alcoholism kept me from becoming an opiate addict. But I really thought that my life had taken an upswing. I was like, this is where it all makes sense. Like, I got the guy. that was like the my highest achievement was being the girlfriend of somebody that I thought was so great. And so when he died, I was just like, and it was a pretty sad year, the last year of his life. I don't know if you've ever seen someone like slowly lose a battle to opiates, but like, I wouldn't bring him back for one day of that. They're not getting high. They're just trying to like stay alive because they don't want to hurt you by dying. So it's like very, very sad. And alcoholics actually do the same thing. It's a way of like being like dead while you're still alive. Cause you don't have people close to you, but it's a brutal existence. So when he died, I was just like, my life was supposed to start improving. What's the deal here? It went from bad to worse. Like my life has been, it started off really bad. A lot of sexual abuse, a lot of physical abuse, a lot of psychological abuse, and then also spiritual abuse, because I was just told my whole life that like other people's souls were going to go to heaven, but like mine was just like bad. And so I just couldn't believe, I was like, why is my life like this? Like, why is my life so crappy? And it took me a couple years on the path to learn about what trauma is. I had kind of an aversion to trauma because people were talking a lot about it, were like very identified with it. But when I learned trauma repair from a few different sources, and I had the first experience of like going back to the first moment where I ever felt fear, and the first moment that I ever felt shame, and going back and either viewing those stories or rewriting those stories, and then immediately feeling something lifted. Like, you know, the feeling when a block is moved, like, you know, those tears taste different.
Oh yeah. Like,
it was like nothing else. And so trauma work was like very useful to me. For a while, it was like a combination of like trauma work and LSD was my thing at the time. But the problem with LSD or any other psychedelics was that there wasn't a guarantee that I was going to have that kind of a breakthrough. Mm. Sometimes I really needed to have that kind of a breakthrough. Like when I was doing stuff around like sexual abuse and shame, I had no feeling in my body anywhere. It didn't work, you know, like I'd be like relying on a psychedelic to clear that for me. And then, it wasn't consistent. Psychedelics can get you there, but they can't get you back. And being able to, sometimes you can only integrate or digest, you know, maybe 10% of what you saw in that realm. The issue that I was having with trauma work is that you had to wait until you were in a state to trace the feeling. And a lot of times if the feeling was too overwhelming, I wouldn't remember to do the work there. So I had run out. It was a kind of a brutal time. I had cleared some trauma around. I had finally accepted the degree to which I was like sexually abused in my childhood. And right after that, because when you clear shame, you know, things come rushing through. So I met my soulmate right after that. And like 4 days after we met, he went to Sundance, the Lakota ceremony. He went to Sundance, and while he was there, I went to the sweat lodge on his property to pray for him, and the elder there tried to rape me. He told me that he was going to do like a spiritual ceremony or whatever on me, went in that direction, and luckily I didn't get raped, but it ended up my partner was gone. I reported it to the people in charge. I wouldn't find out for years later, but they were like, oh, you know, she's making it up. The elder supplied the peyote. So it was like, they wouldn't have a lodge if it wasn't for that. It was like this whole thing. But in those 4 days, I was a wreck. I was like, I thought I was healing. Like, why is this happening again? And the guy's name was Uncle Rick. Like, I grew up sexually abused by all these uncles, you know? So I was like, why? Like, literally the same pattern, though, you know, we're doing this for Jesus, or we're doing this because you need it, or. And I could not believe that it had like happened to me again. And so I was like praying on my hands and knees. I didn't have any money to go to psychics. I didn't have any money to go to therapy. I tried peyote, mushrooms, LSD, none of it worked. And I really wanted to have love, you know, with my smart, my husband now. But I was like, how do I clear this? And so when I was praying on my hands and knees, I was shown, it was like, it was just a vision of how things worked. I knew a lot about the chakras because of my yoga teacher trainings, and I just become kind of like obsessed with them. And I was shown that, like, if you do trauma work, every chakra has a block, and these represent like 7 core traumas that we have. And if you heal the 7 core traumas, you're good to go. You don't have to heal every trauma in your life, but you do have to find the core traumas. Mm-hmm. And so I tried it on myself first, and every single one, it was like huge block removed. And that's what's now my workshop, Wheels Reinvented. It was not until I figured out how to go to the root of my guilt, the root of my anxiety, the root of my grief, the root of my jealousy, the root of my creativity, and the root of my hopelessness or believing that God hated me. When I moved those blocks, everything, that's when my life shifted. So that's on the topic of traumas, like that's exactly how. But until then, painful patterns that started in childhood kept happening to me, no matter where I went, no matter what I did, no matter how spiritually evolved I became, the same getting molested, people I love leaving me, feeling like everyone else would have it and not me. Mm-hmm. These were all occurring because of root traumas. So that's
yeah, we hear about this, like, if you don't heal it and you don't work through it and you don't get to that core, what happens? It comes back and it comes back and it comes back, and you are in this loop and this cycle until and only you can get to that space where you heal those things.
Yeah.
And it's like, with great power comes great responsibility. Like, you can do, I've graduated now, like, or it's a teacher training, what I do with people. So I teach them how to do it on themselves, and then how to do it with others. We do 7 different types of trauma repair in each chakra, but I've run this workshop so many times, and like, it never ceases to make, like, we leave blood on the floor. There's blood on the floor, but it's always really amazing to me, because it's like, when you get the root, you feel it immediately. And the biggest misconception people have with trauma is they're like, this traumatic thing happened to me, so I need to go back and revisit that. And not only is that not always helpful, it can leave you in that therapy state where you went into it, you're crying, and you can't close it back up. And until you close it back up, you can be in that state like indefinitely.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it was the trauma that created the traumatic experience. Like, for example, someone says, okay, well, I was sexually abused at age 13, and that's my trauma, and I need to revisit it. And it's like, actually, something happened to you before then, which made you lay there during the abuse and say, this is how it's supposed to be.
Yes.
And that's like super, it's extremely powerful work, but it takes a really courageous person to be like, I'm not getting up until I heal this. I'm not getting up. This is healed. And it's really, it's shadow work, you know. It's not, so people, you know, when you're giving birth, people say, oh, you know, I hope you have an easy birth. It's not supposed to be easy. Like, it's not, that's not what birth is. Birth is you dying as that person to bring new life in. Like, shadow work is not like it's really dragging your dead ass limbs through a moment and you get through, like, you feel it right away. There's no denying that that something's been shifted.
Yeah, totally. This is so good. 'Cause like, even when we jumped on earlier, just to kind of like do the vibe check and just like really kind of connect with you, all I could think was, the universe is amazing. It brings people into our lives at the perfect timing. And we're going through this thing where we're really like leaning into
not avoiding the shadow work and be like, no, I can just breathe this thing out of me, which is literally an experience I had the other day. And then a friend coming in and being like, hey, you're trying to avoid this thing. And I've been doing so many card readings, probably for the last 3 months, that are like, you need to allow your shadow and your light to come together. It's not like this resistance and like pushing the shadow out and keeping them separate. It's like assimilating them together. It's the yin yang. It's the bringing the balance together. And for the longest time, I think I felt that, although I do, like Tamara and I have talked about this, it's like one of our friends is like, oh, you know, growth doesn't have to be painful. And I'm like, well, maybe.
It doesn't have to be painful. Is that what you said?
Yes. Okay. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe some lighter things, like some lighter growth, doesn't have to be painful. But I left a relationship with my ex probably in 2015. So it's interesting. You said 2015, your partner had passed. And that in that time, I ended up leaving my ex, and we, again, religious, and had 4 kids, left, brought my kids with me. It was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And I didn't really have a job. Like, I didn't know what I was going to do. I actually moved in with my dad. During that time, I had them in the summer, and I had lived with him for 9 months being separated. He was in the basement. I was in our main bedroom, and I had asked him to leave. He wasn't leaving. I could hear him crying through the vents at night, which was hugely hard because I am an empath, and I was like not even aware of it at the time, but taking on that pain. And leave, come here. My kids go to see him. He keeps them and then files a legal, to go to court. And because they were born 3 hours away, like from where I am now, he kept them. So it like locked them in, and it was the most painful thing I have ever experienced in my life. I said, like, and I was sitting at this table talking to her about this, and I said that some things might not feel hard when you're going through them, but that moment, when I didn't have my kids anymore and I'd been a stay-at-home mom for 10 years and literally gave my kids everything, like, you know, like
all stripped away.
It was all, but like when you give, like my daughter who came, like I have 3 boys and a girl at the end, she wouldn't take a soother. So I was her soother. So at 8 o'clock every night, I'm in bed, like reading my Kindle in the darkness because I wasn't tired, but I was her soother and we were co-sleeping. So you give and you give and you give, and that is what you're used to doing. And then that moment was stripped away from me. And I told her, I was like, that felt, and I like started crying because I was like, I felt like I walked through a furnace and had all of the flesh just melted right off me. Like there is no pain like that. And unless you've gone through that to ultimately, like, as we've all, like, I don't know exactly everything that you were feeling gone through, what you went through. Like we can understand and be like, well, it might've felt similar to this, but she's never had kids. So she would not understand that pain that I suffered, but I also wouldn't have come to the conclusion in life that life was a lot more than what I was seeing. And I had to make a choice. It was like, either choose yourself or you're going to be a shell of yourself in this relationship. And I like had to, and I mean, my mind is like expanded like so many times over since that happened. Same thing though, went through that place where I'm like, don't even talk to me about God. God is the reason why I'm here in this place, which isn't really fair because people make choices and choices lead places, you know? And so ultimately the universe knew what was happening, but I still got to make choices and I don't regret it, but it was a journey. And so just now, 7 years later, my kids are all old enough. I left when they were 9, 6, 5, and 3. My kids are now 17, 14, 13, and 11, and they are now coming. So we're putting them into homeschool. I'm going to have them for 2 weeks. They're going to go back up and be with him for 2 weeks. And we're just going to do that all the way through to the end of the school year. And then we make the next decision. So like, it's been a journey, but if I and as hard as that was, had I not had that space and time, as much as I didn't like it, to heal myself, to grow, to walk through the darkness, because all of my life was my kids. That's it. That's all I did. And I lost myself in that. I wasn't putting myself first. I was putting my ex-husband and my children before myself all the time. And I lost myself in that. And I see that very clearly. I didn't know myself. I didn't know who I was. So you strip away the children, you strip away the husband. And all of a sudden I was like standing there and I'm like, I don't know what to do. I feel lost. I feel broken. I don't know what I'm going to do for a job. And my dad gave me some advice that was very powerful. And that was very simple. But he said, sometimes you just got to keep putting one foot in front of the other. Get up, go to work, rinse, repeat. Yeah. And that actually helped me. And then in that space, I met someone who's very religious, but not judgmental. And he was the first person that I could actually have open conversation, because he was never telling me what to do. He wasn't judging me. He was just allowing me a place to sit and love. And that, like, and I've never, like, I will never go back to a building and sit within a building that says, this is God and this is the only place. No. My land is God or universe, the trees, the flowers, the birds, the bees. That's my church. You know, like, I've found peace.
The old ways.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like 100%. And as I'm leaning more into that space and like grounding myself on my land and healing my land, and my land is healing me, because we're pulling like garbage out of the land and stuff like that, that the old farmers just chucked in there. So that's getting worked out of the land. And as I'm doing that, I'm healing myself as well. And it's creating like a much more complete soul, because I'm reconnecting to that part. But like, growth sometimes is so incredibly painful that you don't know how you're going to make it out the other side alive. And you very obviously know that.
Yeah, I don't think that growth has ever come without pain for me. Mainly because I'm not particularly quick to surrender. I think that growth could be painless, maybe even like ecstatic if you were completely surrendered to the process. But like, yeah. I just went through an experience of, you know, needing to transition my teacher. When I graduated and received the name Onami, I was graduating out of the first level teachings of duality into the second level teachings of oneness. But it's not necessarily a smooth transition, because, you know, while your mind may understand that, yes, we're all connected, if you are even slightly ruffled when somebody looks you in your face and says, you're wrong, this is not true, this is not how things work, then you haven't really like comprehended oneness. You know, like it was a very difficult transition. And I did not know. It was a mess. I'm a 6'3 in human design. So I learned by trial and error for my whole life. And I'm actually here to make enormous public mistakes to teach people what not to do. And once I learned that, I was like, oh, okay. Cause I was trying to like keep all the mess behind the curtain, and then it would keep slipping out. Fuck. if I had known then what I knew now, which is like, I'm building an entirely a second business, which means that it's not going to be successful right away. It means that it's going to be a lot of hard work for a long time. It's going to be 2 feet of visibility. My self-worth is going to feel really challenged because I'm not earning in the same way that I was. My sense of stability is going to be challenged because at the time I was a sole breadwinner. Now we work together in the family business. But all like it was literally so sloppy and so painful and so gross. And now like looking back on it, I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I could have just surrendered, But yeah. Surrendering back then would have meant understanding that something I was used to spending 1 month, again, let's make a new workshop, it'll take me a month to do it.
Yeah.
Was going to take me almost 2 years at 2 feet of visibility. Surrendering means surrendering even when something is completely different than any timeline, than any way. Like when you're going from one level of teachings to the next, all of your tricks that you used to use will like suddenly all stop working at once. Mm-hmm. All of the formulas that used to work will like stop working. So there's not anything that you can do. And even like in the teacher's manual of Course in Miracles, they say like, this doesn't need to be painful, but it's usually experienced this way. So yeah, I guess growth doesn't have to be painful, but I would say that for like 99% of the population, it will be experienced that way. And it's not just a belief. Like I remember my husband telling me, he was like listening to me with one of my clients where I was saying like writing a book is hard. And he's like, oh, that's just a belief that you have. And I'm like, yes, but this belief of writing a book is hard seems to be, or this like understanding that writing a book is hard seems to be the big difference between people that talk about writing books and have actually written it. Like just, yeah. Yes, maybe part of it is a belief. Just because it's hard doesn't mean it's not pleasurable, but just because it's pleasurable does not mean that it is not difficult and disciplined to write a mm-hmm. book. So mm-hmm. I'd say like if somebody, no shade to your friend, but if somebody genuinely feels that like growing is not painful, I'd be like, I would like you to measure your growth on a wall of your house. You know, like take your height here and then notice, you know, when you grew from here to here, was it a nice smooth transition or were you get a little muddy?
Someone said they don't call them growing pains for nothing.
Yeah. I saw a shirt one time that said like, if you look cute after your workout, you didn't work out hard enough. That's kind of how I feel.
That is growth. And you know, I love that you brought up surrender because I usually walk into each year, probably like the last 4 years, with just like this word on my heart to carry into the year with me. And this year I was like, nothing was coming to me. And I was like, okay, I'm going to like set my space and set my intentions and just like center myself and just wait. And I was like, where's my word? And nothing came. But I had this moment where I was like, it ended up leading me to Wayne Dyer's quote, open to everything, attached to nothing. Yeah. And I have really, surrender has been coming up for me literally multiple times a day. And I was like, okay, I get it. This is my word. This is my lesson this year. Surrendering to finances, surrendering to everything that is meant to happen for me, surrendering to the unknown, because I'm very like, here, I would love you to have this, but I'm not actually going to let go when you try to take it from me. Like that's very much been my experience. So I'm like, surrender feels absolutely terrifying to me, but I also know what comes on the other side of that, because I've had moments and I've had glimpses of what surrendering brings. And so I just have to keep bringing myself back to that space where I'm like, okay, I know there is purpose behind surrender, but again, it's messy and it's not super simple to do.
It's so messy. Like at surrender, we talked earlier on about like some words that I just like hate in the spiritual industry, and like, love was, I don't hate the words, but I'm like, there needs to be like an objective definition, because what I'm experiencing and what's being labeled as this seems to be kind of different. But surrender was one of them, you know, like I don't, you know, the second I would think, oh, I'm going to surrender, I'd be like, oh, here I go, you know, like floating over that way. And surrender, literally, if we think about surrender, not in the esoteric sense, but in like the military sense, or in like a war sense, you surrender after you've fought like your hardest fight and you realize that you cannot win. And so you do something which is incredibly humbling for you, because you have seen that you've tried to do this. No war that I know of have been like, where they just immediately surrender. Like a lot of times it takes like a pretty fervent battle before you realize like there is just no way that I can do this. And it literally feels like giving up. Like the surrender feel, if we think about like tarot symbology, it would be like the Queen of Cups, like, oh, I think it's going to be like this, you know, where it's like, all right. And I now gracefully release my attachment to the results and surrender. I release my need to get my kids back. That's not it. It's the Ten of Swords face down in the mud with 10 swords in your back. And it's like, listen, bitch, you don't have any moves left. You don't have any moves left. So whether you accept this or not, it's happening, but you can't get up face down in the mud. And actually in that tarot card, the guy's wearing a shirt made out of hair as well, which is like an extra round of the guys. If you thought it couldn't get worse, like I did, I'm like, this guy's face down in the mud with 10 swords in his back. And then my tarot guy's like, and he's wearing a hair shirt. Oh shit. It did just get worse for this guy, you know, like, and he's uncomfortable and he's wearing an inside out shirt made out of hair. But whether you accept this, such an important thing, you know, if we think about a different symbol. So for example, Sisyphus pushing the boulder up the hill. To surrender would be to release the boulder and have it roll over you and crush you and see who you are on the other side of that. Mm. And the pain of life is the curse of Sisyphus is to always be refusing to surrender, just doing his damnest to get the damn thing up the hill. And whether he accepts it or not, he's never going to get that boulder up that hill. Like whether you accept something or not, it's happening. Yeah. It's literally happening to you. Whether you accept it or not, it's happening. So surrender is like accepting the defeat, which feels like, oh my God, I'm giving up. Isn't everything Isn't everything just going to fall into entropy? And that's really where you find out what you believe in. If I stop holding everything up myself, the God that I believe in is going to let everything descend into chaos. I literally thought that if I surrendered my soulmate to the universe, that God was going to set me up with some like nerd dude from Berkeley that wore cargo shorts. Like I was like, if I am not controlling it's got to be with this guy right here, then God is going to set me up with like somebody with a laptop bag. Like I just couldn't. And that's in those moments where you're like, no, I've got to just fight this like one more battle. I can't really surrender this. That's where you really figure out what your concept of God is. But it's there's no real control in this life. So it's like it's not going to change the outcome, whether you accept it or not, whether you surrender, like it's going to have your ass is grass. You're done. You've lost this battle. Mm-hmm. Now you can either accept it or you can keep fighting one more time, you know, like your kid. Yeah. You know, you're like, go back to sleep. No, I'm ready. I got this. It's much easier to just accept the defeat when it happens. And all of a sudden, all of these new opportunities open up, like what you learned. You're like, okay, when I accept this defeat, I cannot get my kids back right now. Mm-hmm. Now, what this does do is it gives me time to focus on something else, to put one foot, to put myself first for a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not the outcome that I had planned. It's not the outcome that I thought, but this is the outcome that I got. So how will I use this to my advantage?
Yeah.
Sucks for you. You got the surrender word this year, but.
Right. And you know, I'm thinking like these two moments, profound moments of surrender. So we have two older kids. My daughter will be 17 in April. My oldest boy is 14. And I have my youngest son, our little rainbow baby, who turns 8 next week. And so after my oldest two, I was like, I wanted more than anything. And it reminds me of like, we were talking earlier about you're like so fixated on like getting rid of your like mom tummy. So I was like, I'm having another baby. That is like my focus. Like, when am I ovulating? When can this happen? When can we do the thing? And we got pregnant and within 8 days we miscarried. And I was like, why is this happening to me? Right? Like this, like questioning what's happening, but we just like moved through it. It was really early on. And I was like, back to work. We're having another baby. Like, we're going to do this. And we fell pregnant again about 6 months later. And at 17 weeks, we lost the baby.
Brutal.
And so I was like, I give up. Like, I'm done. We're not trying for a kid anymore. Like, to my husband, do not touch me. Do not come near me. Like, we're just, this isn't. And it was him that was like, maybe we should stop trying so hard. And I was like, if it's meant to be. And this was like, I'm looking at him now, looking back. And I was like, he was not like the least bit spiritual, least bit growing, least bit anything, like very, but he had this moment where, I don't know, a little bit of light shone through. And so I was like, okay. And we left things and we let things happen as they were meant to. And along comes our rainbow baby, who literally is the puzzle piece that just completes our family. And I look back now and I'm like, had I not surrendered, that cycle would have kept happening. But I had to trust that whatever was meant to be was going to be. And our little Maverick was already just like waiting for me to surrender so he could come be part of our family. And like those moments for me, really, like I leaned into my relationship with God. And looking back, I know a lot of it was, if I don't trust him, the church says I'm going to hell. So like, I better figure out my relationship with him. So a lot of me leaning into that trust, I think came from this place of like fear that I have to trust him. So that was like my very first moment of surrender. And the other one I talked about quite a bit in like our podcast, and we had sort of a bit of a falling out in our family. And we didn't speak to a family member for quite a few years. But me being this person of like, let me take that, is like reaching out and trying to fix everything and solve everything and sending messages and like trying to fix the thing. And I literally remember this very specific moment where I was like, you know what, God, hands off. I can't, I'm exhausting myself trying to fix this. There was so much resistance from the other side, and I just had to completely surrender. And I literally like picture it like handing this thing that is so precious to me that I need to have control over, and just like actually completely letting go. And about 6 months later, we were reached out to by them. And that was about 2.5 years ago. And the relationship that we have with them, I never, ever would have imagined the deep connection and the healing that we have.
Wow.
And so I look at that and I'm like, okay, surrender. And those two moments are just there. And I'm like, I know, I get it. Like, it's hard and it sucks. And I like to hold on to things because I like to know what's coming. I understand the vastness of what is on the other side of surrender because I've experienced it.
Tamara.
Did it feel like a slap in the face though, when your husband's like, I think we should stop trying?
He says things all the time. And I'm like, who the heck are you actually? Like, I thought I was the one who was like, come on, let's grow. And I'm like, oh wait, you're ahead of me. How did that happen?
That's my husband as well. You're good at surrendering. When I was trying to get pregnant with my second one, I like started getting crazy. Oh my gosh. I was getting crazy. But those miscarriages are huge losses. Like, it's
so big.
And like when he says, like, I think we should stop trying, like, what, you know, you're like, but I want to have another baby.
Yes. Yeah.
I can't have a baby without trying. Like,
yeah. Right. And I had this, like, my older two are like, but I want them all like this age apart. And I want to get pregnant at this time. And like, I want to have our baby this month because we have a November baby and an April baby. And like, I have this whole plan. And God is literally like, okay, when you're done, like,
when you're done with that. Yeah. Are you an earth sign?
Oh man, am I what? Sorry.
And are you an earth sign?
Like, I'm not sure.
She's a Gemini.
Oh, I see what you're asking. Sorry. Yeah.
Love that.
I had this conversation yesterday with one of our friends, and we were talking about like Dev's sign and her sign. And I was like, okay, so explain this to me. Like, my husband and I are both Gemini. Like, how does that work?
You tell us. We're trying to figure it out.
Right? I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm like, come on, let's go. Like, I feel like I'm growing at a rapid pace. And then I'm like, hold on, I gotta catch up to you. Like, he surprises me with so many things.
The air sign compatibility is real, you know, because you find, and also, like, you know, not to completely out you, but, you know, Geminis are the freaks in the sheets. So,
oh yeah, you're not outing her at all.
We could get into some conversations, different time, different place.
Is some realness. That's a real
moment. I try to convince my friends all the time that there's some things I should be trying, and they're all like, no, like, well, you don't know what you're missing.
Geminis are the best for that. Geminis are the best for that in the communication. I know, like, the absolute root when it comes to astrology, like, I'm always, my job as a teacher, and, like, if there was a, like, an official title for it, it would be the title of sage. And what a sage does is, is they find all the objective ways, and then they, like, systematize it. They figure out, like, the system. So, like, what all religions agree on, or, and a way of taking the whole world of the education and condensing it down into something that's easy to understand. And with astrology, I there's just two sides of it that I focus on. It's like the elements, the earth, the water, the air, and the fire. And then from that also just the sun, the moon, and the rising. These are, like, the only things that I mess with astrology. But with the wind, you know, it's like, you, where do you come from? Where do you go? You can't ask the wind that. Like, the wind is on its own thing. Like, you can't be like, where, you know, and even with yourself, when you try and do it, when you're like, what's the plan? You know, where is this baby coming from? When can I expect this? Because this would fit in perfectly with everything. You don't get that with an air sign, but what you do get with an air sign is it's just like, it's never a dull moment. It's never a dull moment. It's always like, who am I going to get today?
Yep, that is.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So what sign are you then?
I'm a Capricorn.
Okay.
Capricorn is earth. So, like, earth is the bottom line. Like, basically earth signs say, y'all can argue about what's up in the sky as much as you want, but when I say that something is the bottom line, when I say, like, this is a fact, like, you can't negotiate with me. Mm-hmm. My son is a Taurus, so another earth sign, and we're very, like, compatible, you know, but, like, when we're, is it, dad sometimes has to intervene when we're in a disagreement, because neither of us will back down, you know, it's like the goat and the bull, like,
yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm an earth sign, and Capricorns, they want to, like, start, they start the year and they end the year. So I control it, very hard for me to surrender the illusion of control. It's only ever the illusion. Oh,
yeah.
I can hold on to that thing. Like, I'm just trying to take the, I just need one more sword in my back. I gotta get my air
shirt. And then maybe I'll think about it.
Yeah.
And something, we were doing this work in my private group. We were doing this work, and I was studying my, like, surrender and my control pattern and, like, where it came from. But usually when I do finally surrender, I'm very, like, butthurt about it. I'm not like, oh, I never get to that. I'm like, fine. Fine, you win. You for many days, I get, like, I still, like, it's amazing how, like, juvenile I become when I don't get my way. I'm only now, after, like, years on this path, starting to trust that, like, God does have a plan that, like, might be better than mine. Like, keep my room clean. Like, I don't know why I think I could keep the whole, like, universe running. And, like, the amount of times that I say, and it, me, like, yeah, I say in a year, like, there's no God. Like, that's, my plan didn't work out. There are no gods. It's all on us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like he's literally just, like, sitting up there with his popcorn, like, just watching the shit show that we're creating, just, like, trying to plan out our own lives.
Yeah.
It's crazy, but, like, who you are when things are out of your control is, like, really, like, who you are, you know, like, yes. We have the work that I study is, it's a lineage called the Fourth Way, which is a pretty brutal, like, confronting way to awakening. You don't really like pick your path, it chooses you, but it works well for me because it's not a theology. It's like esoteric physics. So everything about awakening is calculated, it's weighed and measured. There's not a God that you believe in. You do specific exercises to see yourself from these different psychological vantage points where the work becomes very obvious to you. So for example, in a moment where you feel out of control, accepting that that's who you really are and not who you are when everything is going good. And like when things are out of my control, like I can really freak out. I've like wasted a lot of money trying to, I literally spent like 15 grand on like a family trip to Brazil without checking the vaccine requirements if we could go or not. And because I could not handle that, I felt, in my defense, I had COVID and it seemed like a really good idea. like a great idea at the time to like book these tickets without consulting my husband and like rent an Airbnb with no
reason. Oh, no.
Without checking like anything about it. But I just couldn't handle that we were going to be leaving Austin on that date. And I didn't know exactly where we were going to go. So that hopefully that was a rock bottom for me, because I'm a real cheap ass and I hate wasting money on things like that. But it's, you know, we have all these ideas about like what we believe in and who we are, and then it's like things go not according to our plan, and all of a sudden all of these things start to seem like really good ideas. You know, like you at least took the hint and were like, okay, I'm gonna surrender when it comes to my third baby. I'm gonna surrender the timeline. And that's usually the thing that's surrendered is the timeline of how long it takes, which is like shouldn't be that hard, but usually is. But I forgot where I was going, but surrendering. I literally just forgot what I was going to say, but
I actually love this so much, because I'm like, I feel that sometimes Deb will be like, oh my goodness, you just said something amazing. Tell me again. And I'm like, I don't actually remember.
Don't worry. It'll arrive in the shower in 3 weeks time. That was the thing.
Just message.
But it's, when things are out of my control, like I literally am grabbing for I'm reading my tarot cards like three times a day. I'm like, who can I? Oh yeah. So you surrendered quick with the like having a baby thing, but you could definitely have gotten like way quick. You're like, okay, I'm going to go on IVF. I'm going to get all of these different things. I'm just not going to let it go. Yeah. I'm going to control this friggin' thing. Like you can spend a long time and a lot of money, and whether you accept it or not, it's going to happen at the right time.
Yeah.
There's literally no surgery that you can get. There probably will be in like 2 weeks, but no surgery that you can get to like scrape off the lining of your womb to get that womb that's suitable for having that baby.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But when you're in that control, every time you get your period, which is a sign that the correct lining is arriving. This should be something where you're like, yes, getting closer to that baby. But you take the same evidence, your period, and are like, my baby's never coming.
Yes, that's and it's right.
It's like the mindset with which you're looking at it, the same thing is happening. But when you're trying to control it, when you're trying to control, you always see it in the negative. You always see it as something being pulled out of your grasp. And it's like, it's the same life, but one is just like rife with self-induced suffering. And the other one is like, welcome to what God is, like a flow where everything comes to you at the right time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. That's my word for January, Devin. And I did a 12-month card reading when I went down to her place last weekend, and flow is my word for January. And I'm so excited to just like sit in intention at the beginning of every month and like reread the card and just like bring that into each month with me. And then we're like, we do the whole 12 months. And I was like, this year is going to be fucking amazing. And then I pull my like overall energy and I was like, trail of thorns, like what is this? And we just like read it, and it was literally like surrender, surrender, surrender. And I was like, Okay, noted. Got it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Deb's just laughing as soon as I flipped the card. I was like,
hard laugh. Hard. Because my energy last year was chaos.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, she laughs. She's like, ha, last year I was chaos. Now this is your year for some stuff.
Oh, man. I'd love to tell you something. I'm sure we're probably only have a little bit of time left, but flow. So flow is something that can be exactly calculated and measured. And if you don't mind, I'd love, if flow is your word, like flow is the shit. I'd love to explain to you the exactly how flow is measured.
Yeah.
Please.
Teachings for this year. So basically there's all spirituality and everything is fifth dimension. And a lot, the first dimension is length, and the second dimension is height, and the third dimension is depth. And with the arrival, the comprehension of each additional dimension, like it completely ruptured what humanity thought was real and possible in the world. Like when they thought that life was just 2D, where you could either go up or you could go long, when depth was introduced to them, like the entire concept of the world changed. And so it's like we understand fully three-dimensional reality. And now, like as a collective, we're wanting to understand fifth-dimensional technology, which is a portal to all of the other dimensions. So it's like a pretty big transition. But what connects 3D to 5D is 4D. And 4D is space and time working together. And so this is the world that I teach, and I teach all 4D in different ways. But on Earth, there's three forces required for every creation. There's like the symbolism of the Holy Trinity, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. It is in all different world religions and all different world knowledge. And it's the symbol of the triangle. And, you know, in the West, in first level spirituality and duality, we're told that we live in a world of polarities and good, bad, right, wrong, that there's two forces required to create. And those forces would be, for example, a sperm and an egg, and that these two are what creates a baby. But there's always a third force. And the third force is always related to God. The third force is always related to time. The third force is always also related to space. So it doesn't take just a sperm and an egg. It also takes the right womb, which happens at the right time and creates the space. This force is known as the neutralizing force. And it's what takes the conflict of the active force, like the sperm, and the passive force, like the egg, and gives it a space where the two are not in conflict with each other, but growing. And this is how creation happens. So for every single thing that needs to be created, and the flow state is something that we want to create in life, because when you're in flow, everything that you need comes to you. And when you're out of flow, everything that you need feels like a fight. It would be like floating down a river versus holding on to a root on the shore and just feeling like everything is against you, trying to get what you need. As you think that what you need is on the shore, and everything that you need or want for your journey is in that flow. Mm. And so the original like propaganda or the original scarcity was time. Time's running out. And from this first feeling of scarcity, time's running out, we got money's running out, we got love's running out. But the first like piece of belief systems that were not our own was time scarcity. Mm. And the opposite of time scarcity is flow. The opposite of government time is flow. And if you want to get spiritual results that you can keep, like psychedelics get you there, but you can't get back. Having a brief moment of understanding of 5D gets you there, but you can't get back. And people tell you things all the time, like, oh, you know, time isn't linear. We're gods. And it's like, yes, that makes intellectual sense, but emotionally it's useless. And it's actually, if you were gods, you would not have a sarong tacked to your wall. You would not be wearing that outfit. You would not be in, if you were... things in your life would be like, wah, if you were a god. So the divide between 3D and 5D is enough to really frustrate people, because you know the results are possible, but like, why
why is it not working? Mm-hmm. And so in order to be able to absorb higher teachings and do like real magic, you have to understand the true nature of time, and the true nature of time is flow. You guys with me? Mm-hmm. So flow has three states. The first state of flow, and if you have these balanced, if you, first of all, are aware that it exists, if you're aware that a third force exists at all, the world of conflict goes away, because it takes two sides to conflict. And if you could just accept three sides to everything, no more conflict, no more you versus your family member. There's three sides to everything. Uh-huh. Yeah. Three states of flow. Active, passive, neutralizing. No matter what any thing is called the law of three. No matter what any creation is, it's going to require three forces. One will be active, that's Brahma. One will be passive, that's Shiva, or destroying the egg. And then there'll be a neutralizing force, which is Vishnu. So in the flow state, there is your active flow state. Now your active flow state is output. And this is where you're working with what you know. So for example, I know that I want to build a website and I want to do it on Squarespace. And so your active flow state is going to be working on what you know. This is only one part of flow. So a lot of us think that being in flow is being able to be in the active state 99% of the time. Now, when you're in the flow state, you have the mind of God. You're literally possessed by God, being everything is possible in the flow state. It's like, and consciousness expands in all directions. So when you're in the flow state, working on your website, you're getting better at speaking French, you're becoming a better cook, your relationships are solving themselves, you're becoming wealthier, like it expands positively in all directions, which is something I learned from Wayne Dyer, one of my favorites. But the flow state is not being active all the time. So the second aspect of the flow state is the passive state. And the passive state is when you don't know something, but you could learn. So passive is podcasts, books, inputting of any kind. Mm-hmm. You have those two states. So when you're inputting, you're still in flow. Don't feel like that because you're not grinding it out on your laptop that you've fallen out of the flow state. When it's time to study, you're absorbing it completely. If you were trying to force yourself to study at a time when you should be active, you wouldn't retain any of that. So you do active when it's time to be active, and then you study what it is that you don't know but could learn from somebody else. That's passive, and that's one third of things. And then finally, the most important aspect is neutral time. Mm. And neutral time, money flows through neutral, $1 million ideas flow through neutral. Neutral is when there's nothing going out and there's nothing going in. Mm-hmm. This is where things are revealed to you. And so when you don't know, but you could be shown this, and it's the most important aspect because you can save so much time by being shown exactly what you're supposed to do next. And this needs to be one third of your life. And if you're listening to, like, sleep is a good neutral state, but if you're like listening to a podcast before bed or doing something first thing in the morning, like you can't really count that as neutral time. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you're not absorbing what's being shown to you at that time, but neutral time is where you can be, is where you can be shown. So neutral, it doesn't have to mean meditation. If you're cleaning your house, no podcast in, then that can be neutral. If you're not thinking about, cause you know, your body can just go on autopilot and put the things away. Yeah. To you there. Art can be neutral, meditation, relaxation, showers, all of these, but like so many people will tell you, you know, I was sitting at a red light, and I just had this epiphany of how things work. It's like you were in neutral.
Yeah. So I love it.
If you had these three things balanced, the passive time, and if you start looking at your life as like, okay, this is an active activity that I'm doing. This is a passive activity that I'm doing. And this is a neutral activity that I'm doing. You will, at the same time as being able to actually comprehend things, everything will seem to get done for you. You'll be in the flow state at all times, and the conflict or the writer's block or any of that will not be an issue for you anymore.
I love that so much because I'm like, oh man, looking at like a lot of like where I've been, I was very much missing that neutral space. And right now, this year, especially as I've already moved into January, I crave my meditations, my quiet times, my sitting with nothing. My brother and sister-in-law got me a Shakti mat for Christmas. So I've been like incorporating that. And I was watching a video on it yesterday, and she was talking about how like, if you are feeling immediate pain before you even lay on the mat and you feel resistance, there's a lot of tension and a lot that you need to release in your body. And I was like, oh man, like feeling all the things my body has just been releasing like crazy. But I totally understand how those pieces work, because looking at the space where I was missing that neutral, it felt hard. And it felt like this battle back and forth all the time, because I was like, yeah, but like I'm working on things and we have a book club and I'm reading and I'm listening and I'm learning and I'm all of these things. And I'm too tired to meditate, and I'm too tired to sit in my heart space, and I'm too tired to do. So I was definitely missing that piece for a lot of it. But I feel like that is what is holding me together right now in like the chaos and all of the things that are happening, and just like the growth and the season that I'm in, is I need to go to that neutral space. And I never even thought of it as that.
Yeah. And the big piece of freedom that this gives you is like, you don't need to figure anything out. You don't need to brainstorm. You don't need to sit and think about it. For every creative process, you either know or you don't know. Now, no amount of clanking together what you know and you don't know, which is what thinking is, clanking together the things you know against the thing you don't know. This does not create consciousness. You don't need to think. You don't need to brainstorm. You don't need to figure it out. You don't need to have a big, you either know or you can learn or you need to be shown. But we waste so much of our time parked in passive time at the computer, waiting for it to be active time and feeling out of flow because we scheduled it. Time is not flow. You might have scheduled to sit down at your laptop, but if it's not in flow, there's Chronos and Kairos, the original words for time. Like if you, and I had such a good video of me teaching my four-year-old about Chronos and Kairos, but TikTok took it down because they said it was child pornography. I was like, he's
working. Oh my goodness.
But if you, it's like you can finally feel God supporting you. We waste so much time trying to figure things out. It doesn't work. It's never worked. All of that thinking, all of that was usually you just talking yourself into some fucking dumb moves when you could just ask, if you were divinely guided, like, wouldn't you be like, where are we going?
Yeah.
It's been probably the most useful piece that I've gotten in the last few years is understanding how
that flows. I love state. It. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Break down. Really cool.
And that's like a beautiful way to end this podcast. And thank you so much for being on, Onami. It's like been, I just love these interactions because I feel full. My cup feels full after I'm done and I learn, and it's beautiful. And we really appreciate you being here today.
Thank you so much. You guys know where to find me. You can find me at mommyonami.com. And it was great talking to you ladies. I don't know if y'all had kids when you were like 12 years old or something, but it was like a big reveal to me when you guys had kids. You looked very young and beautiful. And then it's like surprise 17-year-olds. I said, what? Okay, cool.
Not that young.
I feel like I was a mom when I was still just growing and learning. I was 20 when I had my daughter, turned 21 the year that she was born. But life-changing, she came in at the perfect time and saved me from so many things. So
Tamara, do you want to ask your question?
I do. Okay. So as we finish, I love, this is like the very one specific thing that we do in our podcast. And I'm really, I think, most excited of all the interviews to hear your intuitive answer on this. And I just love knowing, like, right now where you are, how do you feel like you're aligning with your purpose, with your calling, with what you're here to do? And I know you kind of touched on it in little pieces throughout, but like, if you could just like sum up what that looks like for you.
Yeah, for sure. So I grew up in a doomsday cult. There wasn't multiple jobs that people had. Like, you cooked and you cleaned and you watch kids, and like that was literally it. I didn't know that there were writers. I didn't know that there were, I didn't know that there were teachers. I didn't know any of this. But when I was like 8 years old, I remember where I was. I was in the back of the car, like looking out the window, but I said, like, I'm going to write a book about my mom and my grandmom and me. I'm going to write a book about my mom, my grandmom and me. And I didn't know any of those women. I didn't know myself. I didn't know my grandmom. I didn't know my mom. And I didn't know that I would ever like not live. I didn't know what the world was outside of a cult, but my whole first, like, I always knew that I wanted to be a writer, and I just never knew what I was going to write about. I had no idea until I was 27. I had no idea what I was going to write about. And I've spent the last like couple of years building a school where people could, instead of just doing my workshops like a la carte, that there would be an opportunity for people to train and study with me for a whole year, so I could keep, because my workshops all work together. Everything I do is a magical process, and it's not just about doing the right actions and eliminating all of the activities, only doing the actions that create results that push the needle forward. But it's also really about doing it at the right time. And so I'd spent so long stabilizing and building a school where people could spend a whole year with me. And now that that's finally done, the time commitment of that is quite low. And so I've written 4 books, 1 full length, 3 low content books, but this year we're going to be going to Europe, and I'm going to be working on my first novel there. It's not about my mom, my grandmom and me. That's probably something that I'll do like after my mom passes, which hopefully doesn't happen for a really long time. I've written spiritual manuals. I teach very clear spiritual workshops, but I have been studying sex magic for the last like 5 years, and been thinking for many years about how I could teach people this. And the easiest way that I can think of is to write erotic fiction and to write books that teach you. It's kind of like if all romance novels were like porn.
Yeah.
And you would love to see people like making love instead of just like fucking. There is so much that I would love to initiate people on. And also, like I've always said, like hot guy school, like if I really want to learn something, if a hot guy is teaching me how to use DJ software, like I'll really pay attention. Some of my teachers and stuff, I feel like if instead of them being like a teacher over there, that I could write a story of what it was be like to date, to be like the girlfriend of like a master teacher, and how and get these little snippets of their wisdom at these different beautiful like moments. It's a really different way to teach spirituality, but I'm finally going to have the time to be able to do these just writing projects, which I've been so passionate about. So I think it's really cool that like before I even knew what a writer was, I knew that I was destined to do it. Mm. And for the last few years as a sole breadwinner, mom of 2, like I just didn't know how I would ever find the time to be able to write books like that. But this is the first year that I get to do it. So I feel like I'm like, yes.
I love your energy coming from this right now. I just like am watching your face just like light up, and that's amazing, and I'm so excited for you.
I'm excited too. This will be, we'll see what book actually comes forward, but that's from May, June, July will be in Europe, and that's the time that I have allocated to work on that. So we'll see what books tend to kind of like channel through. So we'll see, but I also get to write about like some of my different incarnations and stuff. And when it comes to past lives and stuff like that, when you understand it, it's one thing, but if you have other people giving energy to that projection, then you really get all the powers from these other lives. So like, if I were to write a story about another life that I had as a priestess, in like, you know, the greenwoods of England way back in the day, you master something when you teach it. So when you write it, you teach it. And it's like, it's such a good way to get ahead spiritually. It's such a good way to like gain access to more powers, is to like put that shit on paper and see what happens. So I'm very excited. I might have like a whole like wardrobe change. I might like go like full out.
Yes. I love it. Amazing. Oh, thank you again so much for being here. You have just filled our cups. It has been next level connecting with you. So
thanks so much. Thank it was you. Great to be here. Like I said, this is my favorite thing, my favorite thing to do. I love coming on podcasts, and I never like look them up, like whether it's a big podcast, a small podcast, or anything podcast. Like I love talking to people, and thank you so much for introducing me to your audience, and I'll talk to you ladies soon. I'll see you on TikTok. Thank you. Yeah. Bye, ladies. Have a great day.
You too.
We know time is precious. We are so grateful that you took the time to listen. Our hope is that our hearts convey the message we are sharing in a way that inspires you to step into growth and embrace your journey.
Come and find us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok under Align and Rise. If you connect with our content, let us know by giving us a like or a follow.